Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt.
Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. Now and live.
Was the Boneyard match actually good? I am Luke Owen. This is Adam the Blomp PA. And
hello.
Welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast review of WrestleMania 36, Night Uno. So, right, let's talk about, I would argue, the biggest talking point of this show, which remarkably is not Braun Strowman as the new Universal Champion, which remarkably is not Becky Lynch beat Shayna Baszler.
No.
It is, was the Boneyard match.
you're already called it the Boner match. Fantastic.
Was the Boneyard match actually a good? Was it good?
Yes. although it does raise a very important kind of canon lore issue, which is that they killed Carl Anderson. Like,
he was up on that roof.
He's still there. He was knocked out with the tombstone. I mean, you saw the mercy shot. Well, I mean, Gallows got thrown off, but you didn't see the mercy shot of Anderson leaving the Carl Anderson is dead.
It was
officially
AJ got buried and his hand was sticking out the ground like the evil dead.
I mean, I'm assuming Gallows will kind of like just dig him up, but Anderson died.
The charred remains of Anderson are up on top of that barn to this day.
His poor hot Asian widow. I legitimately really liked it. And I honestly can't tell if it was because I was five cans deep or it was 3 a.m., but I had such a good time. Genuinely, it's the first time that Undertaker's seemed cool in about 5 years.
Yeah, and it's funny because Ollie and I have talked about how The Undertaker has felt quite lame at times in the lead up to this because they've done so much. Like, it's felt like it's a feud between AJ and Michelle McCool that The Undertaker is sort of accidentally a part of.
Yeah.
But the promo he cut on the Raw leading into this was so, so good. Like, it was just an incredible promo.
Yeah.
And then this match, and it was funny, like, I think during the live reactions and the In Case You Missed It video that I did, people are under the impression that I did not like this.
Oh, really?
Because I called it goofy and it was hokey and it was very silly. And I laughed a lot. I laughed uproariously at certain moments, particularly when The Undertaker like got stabbed in the arm and just went,
son of a bitch. It's so great.
And when the Dark Order attacked him and... You know, and then like the barn exploding and Taker teleporting behind AJ Styles. I loved a lot.
I know, like I think I knew I was in for a good time when Undertaker turned up to the kind of royalty-free music that they play over softcore porn scenes, just like the sort of generic kind of slightly too smooth rock.
And I was just like,
was it?
Yeah, it was a Metallica song. It was probably really expensive.
Well, okay, that's me exposing my lack of Metallica knowledge then. I just thought it sounded like softcore sex music. Is all of Metallica's music like that?
I mean, I don't think James Hetfield would say that it is. From now on, that's all I'll ever describe it as.
All right. Royalty free. The opposite, in fact. On the contrary. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Well, he sounded very silly approaching to Talica.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant. Who were those druids? Did they get those through Fiverr?
Well, I guess so. I called them because Gallows and Anderson are AJ Styles' goons. So those druids were Gallows and Anderson's goons. So they're goons.
It's like a pyramid scheme. They're just kind of duplicate. Like you need more and more goons. Those guys each have to hire like 20 goons each.
I think people were under the impression that I didn't like it, but actually, I did enjoy it. I got a big kick out of it because I enjoyed how sort of silly it was. Mm. I don't think I could make the argument that it was epic. And like, you know, WWE.com described it as like a harrowing experience. I certainly wouldn't call it that. This wasn't Train to Busan. Like this wasn't like an actual movie, but it was a very goofy, silly movie.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it for that reason.
It wasn't like the match that New Day had with the Wyatt family, where they were just like, we're actually trying to make a pretty serious horror movie, actually. So like, could you just jangle the camera a little bit more? Cause like, that's real primal terror. Like they, you know, there was a big Undertaker must've rigged up his own logo on that barn. He must've arrived earlier in the day. Maybe Michelle helped him with it, but
in this match, I want my logo projected up on top of that barn.
Do you remember my logo now? Like maybe it's because it's been so long, but yeah, like Undertaker, yeah, he even talks cool. And I know the American Badass promos were always a little bit kind of like, oh, like a little bit too close to the Fred Durst, kind of just like, this is a bit, but like, I don't know, he sounded cool. I like, holding AJ by the throat while AJ was plaintively asking him, please don't bury me. Please don't bury me.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Because I got a big kick out of it.
It felt like they knew it was silly. You know, there was there were too many purposefully silly elements. I don't think they, like, you know, the light appearing behind the digger with Undertaker there, like all this stuff kind of raises too many continuity questions. It's Acme logic. It comes out of Hammer Space. I thought it was great. I really, gosh, they really like the word bitch in modern WWE, don't they? It's the swear word they can say, and it still gets a reaction. You broken down old bitch.
Me and Laurie kept saying, because have you ever seen that Key and Peele sketch? Where I said, bitch. All weekend, every time when someone said it, me and Laurie would go, I said.
That's great. But yeah,
so the match starts. As you said, Taker arrives to his softcore porn music.
That's great. That's going to be my legacy for this channel forever now. I haven't heard Metallica.
Metallica. Royalty-free Metallica music. Napster would disagree.
Oh no.
And so he arrives to that, and it's funny as well, because like Ollie in his review said that this was so sort of like out of continuity of the rest of WrestleMania, and it felt like, you know, the Undertaker cinematic universe, that AJ lost nothing by him being completely destroyed in this match. Because I would argue that AJ was made to look like quite the chump in this match. Hmm. Because he was beaten up forever. Undertaker also then beat up his goons, and then beat up his goons' goons, then beat up AJ some more, then beat up his goons some more. And AJ really only got one bit of offense in.
He killed his friend.
And the Undertaker teleported out of that. So this made the Undertaker look awesome. Like he looked like the most unstoppable badass in the world. And AJ, you know, who is going to be around next week, looked like a bit of a chump.
I mean, I feel like Undertaker knew, because he made a point of being like, yeah, you've given me a hell of a fight, AJ. No one's tested me like you have. I mean, people have beaten me at Mania twice, but really, AJ, you hit me in the back with a shovel after a distraction.
You and your 12 mates.
Yeah, you called me a broken down old bitch. No one's ever called me that. I have to respect it. Anyway, I'm going to murder you now.
There's also the other topic from this. Sorry, go on. I cut you off there.
Well, it's just like, I find it really difficult to actually complain about it because it does feel for all the kind of we joke about, oh no, they killed Carl Anderson. This feels like the most Elseworlds match they've ever. Yeah. It feels like a a what if random story, which I think is actually probably the best place for Undertaker right now. Set him up with a random dream match once a year, which you can shoot in a boneyard, or like just make it, give it like every year, just like add more lore to it, like the Matt Hardy universe.
I think it's hilarious. Like Vince McMahon looks at broken Matt Hardy, he's like, I don't get it, but when the Undertaker does, like, oh, I get it now, right?
Because you're the Undertaker and you make us so much money.
But you're absolutely right, like, you, because Taker can't really go anymore. You know, he's very, very broken down. There's a new documentary series, like a limited series they're doing on the network that they advertised on WrestleMania. Oh. And it is like this, like, look at his whole career and stuff. It looks awesome. Looks really, really cool. But, you know, one of the big points of that is that he's had so much hip surgery, or so many hip surgeries. He's had so many surgeries over the years that he does struggle to walk. And, you know, he is not the sprightly young man that he once was, because it's 2020 and it's not 1995 anymore. However, when I was watching this, I never thought, man, he's a broken down old bitch. I never thought that at any point during this match, because he just looked cool.
Yeah.
So they've almost stumbled upon, by accident, the secret formula to doing Undertaker matches for the next 10 years.
Oh, let him go. Let him go. I completely and utterly agree. I mean, it's the old wrestling maxim, isn't it? Like, who is it? Paul Heyman? Or, I mean, I'm pretty sure every promoter says that you accent your positives and hide your negatives. The positives is that Undertaker, when he's talking as a pissed off but Texan, he's still really charismatic. He still cuts a great silhouette. He's still got a good moveset. All you have to, you know, he just can't go live. So just edit around him, and people, and as long as you put enough creativity and like softcore porn music in, like the fans will be there.
If the fans, you porn it, they will come.
Ooh, graveyard of dreams.
Mick Foley put up on a 5-second clip of himself on Twitter after the match, saying, like, WWE, Vince McMahon, can I be in next year's Boneyard match?
Oh my god! Oh my god!
That's the way you can have the three faces of Foley all come out, because you can edit around all of this.
Oh my god, the Boneyard Cinematic Universe, the BCU. I need it. I want it. Oh, that's fantastic. It's giving me
I was already really looking forward to the Cena Wyatt match tonight anyway, because I think it's going to be like, with like Fiend apparently is taking a big sort of like creative direction on a lot of this, and Cena has like been really praising him for his sort of like creative vision on it. So I'm super looking forward to what they produce. But actually, this Boneyard match made me even more excited for it. And I'm one of the few people as well that liked the House of Horrors match with Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, because it had a tractor that drove itself, and I thought that was hilarious.
Like, everyone hated the House of Horrors match. I mean, obviously not everyone, but like you get very aware of what consensus is with wrestling. One of the kind of commentary stuff that I gets on my nerves occasionally is sometimes you can get it wrong because everyone seems to decide en masse about a certain thing. What is it that separates the Boneyard match from the House of Horrors match? Because both were dumb, like, you know, self-driving tractor, but everyone hated the House of Horrors match, whereas seemingly everyone really likes the Boneyard match. What's up with that?
I don't know. It was quite split in the live chat when me and Laurie were doing the live reactions. There were some people who thought it was quite lame and it was quite dumb, but there were the other side of it that thought it was the best thing ever. And I think that the pendulum has swung more the other way to it being the best thing ever, sort of like with some, you know, some hindsight behind us so we can kind of look back on it. But it is weird. And it's funny as well. A lot of people pointing this out in the comments as well, that one of the things that Ollie and I really didn't like from AEW from the last couple of weeks was Matt Hardy teleporting around the arena, which we thought was super dumb and hokey, and it really undermined the segment. But yet I didn't like that, but I was completely fine with The Undertaker teleporting behind AJ Styles and thought it was hilarious and very, very silly and wonderfully dumb. And I guess it's because WWE is in one, The Undertaker is this sort of cartoon character, that it's fine for him to teleport. He's been teleporting for the last 30 years.
It's a weird line to cross. Like, what can you not get away with live? I guess there's just something about it being right there in the building, like Undertaker, a lightning bolt hitting a rocking chair and the rocking chair going up in flames looks a bit crap when it's in the actual ring. But, you know, we're done with actual kind of like special effects and camera shots. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess WWE are making movies. They're making movies. And, you know, turns out when they really, really try, they can make a pretty... No, exactly. They can make a pretty good movie.
Speaking of which, did you see the trailer that they also... the WWE Netflix movie that's out on Friday, I think it's called The Main Event, features...
Is that the one
Keith
with
Lee
like...
in it?
It's got a kid, right, with a magical mask? It's all very Goosebumps.
That's right, yes. Yeah. That's probably why I'd really appeal to me. And I was like, that looks like the greatest film ever. Let's definitely do a watch-along of that.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's get into some of your thoughts on the match. Jobber JJ has been in touch to say, I loved the Boneyard so much. Taker should do these kinds of matches from now on for WrestleMania. How much damage has WWE done to the Universal Championship? We'll get onto the Braun Strowman bit, the Braun Strowman stuff in a bit. But it's an interesting thing to dive into. But we'll get to that shortly. Mark Flay, I think Becky winning was a mistake, and I'm a Becky fan.
Oh yeah, congratulations on that prediction, by the way.
Hey, you're very welcome. Well, congratulations to you on your Braun one.
Oh, thank you very much. Look at us with our silly guesses that turned out to be silly true.
Axe Adapter said, today's my 19th birthday, spending it with a lovely time with the boys for night two. Support WrestleTalk, been subscribed since WrestleMania 33. Thank you very much, Axe Adapter. That's amazing. Thank you so much. That was my first Mania on this channel, I think. Jake Zimmers, if WWE counts the Boneyard match as one of two main events, and you know they will, then I'm like 83% sure that Undertaker became the first person to main event a WrestleMania in four different decades.
Oh, wow.
So, okay, so we definitely main evented in the 90s.
Yeah, he main evented, what, Mania 8? No, not 11? 13.
13. Okay, so he did that one. He had one in the 2000s. He had the Edge match,
mm-hmm.
which I think was like 2008. Yeah, 2008. Then he, and he had the Batista one. The Batista one as well was the main event, I think.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And then during the 2010s, he had the Roman Reigns match. And yeah. Here we are in the 2020s. He's headlined again.
That's an amazing stat. I love that.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for dialing that, Jake. That was great, great bit of fun knowledge.
It's incredible for a man with high-waisted trousers who can't walk. It's really good going.
It's very impressive.
Would that we all got that deep into our careers.
I will say, though, a lot of people, because I kind of said that I didn't feel the American badass was returning, and a lot of people said that I have been wrong, but I'm going to say that I'm still right, because if I don't hear Kid Rock or Limp Bizkit, that is not the American badass.
They couldn't get the rights to it. They were too expensive. They had to go on the cheap. They had to get something from Epidemic Sound.
Nate Drop Surname said, I really disagree with you guys about the Taker match. Didn't enjoy the silliness at all. Worries me for the Firefly Funhouse match that they will have cartoon sound effects. Well, I 100% think there will be like cartoon sound effects. I described it as, and this might be slightly too deep cut of a reference, but the Twilight Zone movie in the 1980s, Joe Dante's take on It's a Good Life is sort of set in this, like a kid who can imagine anything and make it real has created this cartoon world. Recommend people go and watch it out, because that is what I think the Firefly Funhouse match is going to look like tonight. A living cartoon.
I really hope it starts like very cartoony, and like it starts with Bray Wyatt, and then it sort of melts away like a dream, like it just kind of peels away into an actual hellscape. Like that would be 100%. So cool. Like after the Boneyard match, I'm genuinely super hyped for the Firefly Funhouse match, which I wasn't expecting to be.
Me too. A couple more. We've got Dylan from Cork, who said, loved every minute of the Boneyard match. Wacky as hell, but it was performed brilliantly. And Alistair Gammon said, here's my super chat, bitch.
Nice. Well played, sir.
Pops at everyone.
Yes.
Right, well, let's go through the show as a whole. The pre-show was a lot of chatting, but we did get a very fun sort of three-minute match between Drew Gulak and Cesaro, which Cesaro won with the no-hands airplane spin. Very much enjoyed it for the sort of 3 minutes that it went.
Yeah, like, I guess I do think if you're going to play they played the Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins package twice, and it's just like... I get it. I get what you're doing. But like, if you've got a spare 5 minutes, who does it hurt to give them just a tiny bit longer? Drew Gulak is supposed to be kind of like Daniel Bryan's sensei, right? He's supposed to be a little bit better. I mean, he did some good stuff. Like I thought the chain wrestling was good. I think it is difficult to lose to a look mum, no hands and come out looking as strong. But I worry that I'm a little detached from this Mania to be just like, there was stuff that I really disagreed with, and we'll get to that, I'm sure, later on, probably in three matches time. I find it very difficult to kind of care too much about stuff like burials and momentum, because they're like, it's this wrestling's broken right now, and eventually when they let the crowds back into the arenas for the first time for the first show, everyone's gonna be over. So like, I get don't screw around with people's characters too much, but like, I don't think you should assign too much weight to what happens in these weird ghost shows, because which is not to say that I think like you shouldn't give really talented workers more time, because, you know, if they're going to put them in the building, if they're going to take the risk by having them in the building, they might as well do their best job, right? So I guess that's a legit complaint, a bit of a gripe about this Mania, is they felt it felt really rushed in some places, and they were just like, I'll just do it, just get it out. You don't need 15 minutes, do it in seven, come on, we all want to go home. But also, yeah, like airplane spin. No, just like I'm a rambler, so do feel free to just stop me when I peter off, because I will just stop talking and like my sentences will just go off a cliff. So you jump right on in, Luke.
Peter off, he's a nice fella. We also in this got a promo for Gears of War, because Dave Bautista is in Gears of War, and he has got a new mode where you can Bautista bomb people and blow them up,
explode into chunks. That was very dumb.
I loved it. And also, because now that we're doing more of these cinematic things, we could get Bautista back and he can blow some people up by Bautista bombing them.
Exactly. He makes movies as well.
He does.
God, I haven't played Gears of War in a while. I didn't replace my Xbox when it died, so I didn't get the Xbox One. So is Gears of War good?
Oh, I mean, you're asking the wrong person. I haven't played one since the first one at university. So, yeah, I don't know, unfortunately.
Is he like actually in the game, or is it just like a multiplayer thing?
Oh, you've asked me a question I don't know the answer to, okay. Adam. Now I look like your Metallica knowledge.
We can't believe you don't know about Gears of War 5.
We got 70 my man opening the show to kind of explain the situation. And yeah, I'm going to agree with Ollie on this one. It did make me feel oddly proud as a wrestling fan that this was still happening. It gave me a sense of sort of silly pride.
Yeah, it really fluctuates with me between like, oh, WWE, you're awfully proud of all these risks you're taking. maybe you don't have to do this. But like, I also, WWE's kind of show must go on, can do almost kind of psychotic attitude towards making sure the show goes ahead. It is kind of admirable in its own way. I'm surprised it was Steph. I really thought it would be Vince.
No, yeah, I thought it was a smart move to have it be Steph. But yeah, I see what you're saying. And then we had the opening video package for this, which was this, they had this sort of like, you know, Seven Seas sort of Pirates of the Caribbean style, you know, everyone was a pirate. Seth curb stomped a giant crab, drew Claymore to Kraken. But it also was like a meta video as well, in which you had someone who was sort of like rewinding it and recutting it to point out that it was quite silly.
Yeah, like I thought that was a bit crap. I mean, like, if you've got to call out what a terrible Johnny Depp impersonator you are, then maybe, like, okay, yeah, you are, and yet here you still go talking away. But it was fine. It was very much WWE comedy, which like when they do goofy stuff, I think they're better at it. But when they actually write jokes, like write a joke down on paper and ask someone to say it, tends to be a bit rubbish. I do like they gave Kofi a shine moment though, as a way of saying sorry mate.
Speaking of being sorry, the Gronk was doing intros and he was wonderfully obnoxious. I say wonderfully, I really he sort of threatened us with never-ending parties. And Laurie perfectly described him as Stifler. He is, but he's Stifler in 1999 when people thought that he was the funny character, whereas now in 2020 we realize he's the tragically unlikable character.
He's a sad man. I got immediate Jake Peralta before he'd grown up vibe.
Yeah.
Just like, yeah, I can imagine him saying likeable. Moist. Yeah, a lot like, yeah. So without an Amy in his life or a Holt, just someone who's just been left to drift from party to party. God.
And Mojo Rawley is definitely Charles, just constantly walking around being like, yeah, you're the coolest.
I got his matching hats. Yeah, your best friend won. Oh God. I don't know. Like, it's the Gronk, isn't it? What do you say? Yeah. What can you say about the Gronk?
He will be 24/7 champion by the time night two is over. He will be 24/7 champion.
He would have done it at least once. Yeah. Do you think it's going to go back to him and then Archery is going to take it back? Yeah, probably.
I think so. We then had our opening contest, which was Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross versus the Kabuki Warriors, rather. Decent match, this. Got a lot of time given to it. The titles mean absolutely nothing, but they've tried to make this feud to feel as important as possible. But I thought it was a decent match. And in the end, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross got the win and switched the titles.
I know. You normally get the big, crazy, expensive entrance if you're losing. Kabuki, like, she's a pirate. She's a pirate. She just came out dressed like she normally does for pay-per-views, which is fine. Like, she looked amazing because the Sky Pirate gimmick is fantastic. But just like, you know, you can get Shotzi Blackheart a little plastic tank. Get her a pirate ship. She's a pirate. It's Pirate Mania. It's the only one you're going to do.
Yeah,
it's her first match on Pirate Mania.
And it's possibly going to be her last.
Probably.
It's going to be her last. So yeah. Because the report is, you know, her contract is up this year.
Stardom
so interested. Like, Bushiroad, to kind of like rebuild the Stardom brand, want to bring back Kairi Sane. And next year, when Io Shirai's contract expires, Io Shirai, they want to bring both of those back into the fold. So, yeah, maybe that's why they dropped the belts, is because Kairi's on her way out. They want to move Asuka back into singles competition. Although, with that, then I don't know where you go with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, because there are no other women for them to feud with. There are no other tag teams.
Iconics, I guess, when they come out of the weird, you know, kind of dark room that Aleister Black was locked in.
We then got what I would say is quite comfortably the worst match on this show, which was Elias versus King Corbin. Corbin didn't think Elias was going to be there, and Elias was there. They had a standard TV match, and it was so long. And the kind of the finish, I quite like the finish, was that Corbin got caught cheating, and then Elias cheated to win.
Yeah.
So I thought that was quite fun, but the match itself was so boring.
What do you say about it? Like, it's the moves. Baron shouted a lot, which he didn't have to.
He's a grunty old man.
Yeah, like, I get it. Everyone gets a payday, right?
Yeah, and I like both guys, but this match didn't work for me. I just thought it was quite tedious, and it just seemed to go forever as well. And it didn't feel like WrestleMania. It's like, I think my biggest takeaway from it is this match did not feel like it belonged on a WrestleMania card.
Yeah, well, this one I think served to really damage the show as well. Like, because this one really made you feel how empty it was. Because I think one of the nice things about the Kabuki Warriors matches, they gave it time, so it felt like you could all, like, with enough like bells and whistles or just good enough wrestling, or with Asuka shouting enough, you can just let yourself be taken away a little bit and just be like, oh, this is wrestling, I'm watching wrestling. But just with a match with those few stakes, that kind of over and done with Corbin weirdly working the announcers instead of the crowd. Do you like this, Michael? Michael, do you like this? Come on, Michael. 1, 2, 3. Michael, Thor. It really highlighted how broken the show was, and I think it was a real blunder to put it on, to be honest.
You can just give
them a WrestleMania payday without having having to wrestle, right?
Well, they're independent contractors, Adam. You got to work for that paycheck. Just ask Braun Strowman.
How dare you be poor?
All right, up next, poor old Shayna Baszler took on Becky Lynch. So this was thought to be Shayna's big crowning moment to win the Raw Women's Championship. She came in, you know, she was Survivor Series, beating both Becky and Bayley in their triple threat main event. She was then made to look really strong during the Royal Rumble. In fact, she was going to win the Royal Rumble up until 2 weeks before the match happened. She was then put over super strong in the Elimination Chamber. Like, you know, she was the first person to eliminate everyone and win. And then she got here and Becky rolled her up and pinned her. And it was a good match. It was easily Shayna's best match on the main roster. I think she's had some really good matches down in NXT. This was easily her best main roster match. But it was, Shayna felt like the backdrop to the bigger feud, which is the return of Ronda Rousey.
Mm. I felt like this is the one I think that I get it if people are really cross about. I think everything else is just be just like, well, what, you know, it's a haunted mania. There's not much you can do. This one, I don't really see any justification for it. Not necessarily for Baszler losing, but like, how long did it go? 7 minutes?
8 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, like, what? This is like one, like a lot of people thought this was going to be the main event. That's how
it was going to be, yeah.
That's how marquee it was built up. So I don't get it. Like, even if Vince doesn't like Shayna, which is the only thing I can think of for her losing this quickly, and obviously there's loads of backstage stuff about it, but even then, why would you tank one of your big advertised matches to have it go? I mean, I don't think Becky Lynch came out of this looking great. She got her ass kicked and got a lucky win. Baszler looks like a bit of a chump for losing to the same move that Kairi Sane pulled on her in NXT. And one of Shayna's foundations of her gimmick is that she learns. Yeah. She learns from stuff. Like, that's what her takeover, that's what makes her kind of, I think, the best takeover women's performer like they've ever had, because she's been there for so long. You see the evolution, like she learns from every opponent and she like adapts her game. And I didn't get any sense of like she's mercurial. I didn't get like she hit Becky a lot, she kicked her and stuff. So like, yeah, man, really, really disappointed. This is the one you really, really felt, and at this point it really felt like, oh no, oh the worst mania. Oh, and dear,
this really did feel to me the biggest sign that the Dave Meltzer's report that Vince does not like Shayna Baszler was a very correct report, that Paul Heyman is very high on her. Paul Heyman's a big advocate for her, but Vince doesn't get it and Vince doesn't really like her. And yeah, I think that's why he changed the chamber thing, but I think he just wanted to give her that so Becky beat the big badass at Mania so she can then face Ronda at SummerSlam. The other thing as well from this is that after the match, Shayna was acting like she got the shoulder up. She was saying like, no, my shoulders were off the mat. But in the replay, it was very clear that both of her shoulders were down. So Laurie and I theorized, I wonder if they were going to play off the fact that Ronda's shoulders were up at last year's WrestleMania. So Becky has got essentially two false wins at WrestleMania over the Horsewomen. But Baszler's shoulders were very clearly on the mats in the replay.
I mean, if that was the plan and they just botched it the other way by having it not botched.
Quite incredible.
That would be amazing.
Then we had a really, really fun match between Daniel Bryan and Sami Zayn. It was all based around character work, which, you know, Gulak was taking out their heels and Bryan was just absolutely beating Zayn from pillar to post. But it was all came down to the end, which was that as Bryan was on top, Gulak gave him the instruction of go to the corner and do your running knee, because he's been coaching him. But he then got distracted by Gulak because Gulak got attacked by Cesaro and Nakamura. Bryan then took out Cesaro and Nakamura. But when he dove off the top rope into a halluva kick from Sami Zayn, so he could get almost like the fluke win. You know, Bryan essentially beats himself. It was not the Bryan Danielson El Generico match that I think some people thought it might be.
Yeah.
But it's their WWE characters doing a match at WrestleMania, and for what it was, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I let myself get too excited. I think I thought they were gonna, because like, yeah, they don't have time limits. These are two of the best wrestlers in the world. Daniel Bryan's got quite a lot of backstage sway. I let myself be tricked in thinking that they were going to give it like 15 minutes. And you know, it went long, but that was just because of a lot of kind of pre lockup shenanigans. And again, like, Zayn is one of the best, I think, like mid-match storytellers. I know Daniel Bryan is amazing. Like, everyone talks about kind of like his connection with the crowd, but like, even without a crowd, he's really good at just timing, just when to say stuff. Like, I think what you compare this match to with the other matches on Mania, because gosh, in a quiet Mania, you can really, really hear all the wrestlers coming up with cool trash talk. That's mega awkward most of the time. How do you like this? Yeah, what a joke. this your guy, is it? Yeah, take this. Oh, you like that? Do you want some more?
The live chat was basically just having it, like when we did the live stream last night, was just having a debate as to who Sami Zayn now looks like. He's got his sort of big frizzy hair. And this is the two front runners were Prince Harry and Daniel Stern from Home Alone.
I like that. I would also like to throw Fozzie Bear into the mix. But yeah. Fozzie Bear, if they're doing the Muppets, do the Bay of Pigs. Which, you know, anything's better with Muppets.
Wacka wacka.
Yeah, so these guys, I thought they actually sounded like they took some time backstage and actually came up with not only spots, but stuff to say. So it actually felt like a little bit of a script rather than just making stuff up on the hoof. I really dug it. I thought this was going to, this is going to be match of the night. Like when this match really gets cooking, they've done so much kind of stuff, you know, like, they're going to get Drew Gulak and everyone's going to leave and then they're going to sit in for 15 minutes. And they didn't. And it's like, that's fine. It did at least tell a story in its lead up and its execution. I just, especially after Becky and Baszler underperformed, to have two matches with a huge amount of upside potential underperforming in kind of in-ring terms. I think that was, again, another bad sign. It just, just made me grumpy, but I worked myself. I wanted it too much, and I guess that's my fault. That's what WWE have got me
over the years.
Yeah, it's my fault. It's the children that are wrong.
Exactly. Remember when Paige told us that women's wrestling was bad in WWE because of the fans? You were the ones who made it bad.
You're right. We did. We're sorry, WWE. I better. Okay. I will resubscribe. I'm sorry.
We then had our triple threat ladder match for the tag team titles. It was John Morrison versus Kofi Kingston versus Jimmy Uso, because the reports came out that Miz showed up to the taping unwell, and him being unwell and being sent home was, you know, the sort of the catalyst for Roman Reigns realizing that him being there was also putting himself at risk, which, you know, and so he made the very correct decision to go home and self-isolate away from this because he is in that higher risk category. And so they did what they could and then just did the triple threat instead. And these three went out there and did the same match they would have done if there was a crowd. And it was kind of weird to watch a ladder match where you would get like the big ohs and the ahs from the crowd, but they weren't there. So instead you just heard them in pain and agony as they sort of like rolled around the floor. There was some crazy, crazy spots in all of this. And yeah, these three sort of went hell for leather with all of it.
I first Mania match is what I got in my notes. This is the first one. Like, this is the one where it's just like, okay, we're at Mania. Cool.
That's right.
I'm super glad that, like, I do think it was very dumb for Miz to turn up to the taping sick. I'm glad he was sent home. I'm glad that John Morrison wasn't punished for that. I'm glad they didn't take the belts off them, because I know WWE occasionally have a little bit of a weird disciplinarian thing where it's just like, well, you're going to take your punishment in the ring. I thought they were going to take the straps off them and give them to Kofi for that reason. Just like also a way of saying, sorry. I dug it. I thought it was really, really great. I don't really have any, like, you could just list off spots, but I don't really have any kind of analysis other than I liked the ladder bits. The ladder bits really good. I thought the ending was fun. I like it when they do a creative, the fact that they can still find semi-creative ladder finishes.
Yeah.
In the year of our Lord 2020. Good.
So the finish of this was they pulled down sort of the gold triangle that holds up the belts. And Jimmy and Kofi are holding onto it, but Morrison is also trying to grab hold of it as well. And They then pushed Morrison off the ladder, so he sort of fell onto this ladder bridge. But in doing so, Morrison fell back and pulled the tag titles off the Golden Triangle to win the match. Mm. And I thought it was a really, really creative finish. But Laurie and I had worked ourselves into a tizzy that we thought we'd completely worked out the finish, which was that Kofi and Jimmy Uso were going to pull down the tag titles and they were going to become tag champs as like this sort of like dream team of like the New Day and the Usos together. And then they would then face off against Big E and Jey Uso for the tag titles. And it'd be this weird sort of meshing of tags. So we worked ourselves into that would definitely be the finish, and it wasn't. But I actually prefer the one that they did.
Yeah, I thought it was good, clean. Yeah, just defending the tag titles in a weird triple threat that they could have done like a crazy Nitro style booking and stuff. And I think it would have been interesting, but I think this is definitely just a lot cleaner. Although the only thing I wish is that he kept hold of them in his hands. So like like when he fell off and like impacted the ladder, if he just kept a tight hold on, that would have been a really cool shot. Like he falls back onto the ladder, he's out cold, but clutched in his wrist are a tag title each. Yeah. So he's just like there, like Christ, with the tag titles. I thought that would have been very, very nice. I also like your booking though. That would have been very fun. Maybe. I also
you can use that one if you want to, if you're one of your next videos.
Appreciate that. The only thing I cheeky bastard. The only thing that was weird for me, like watching it, like yeah, like it's weird to not get a kind of like an oh my god or a reaction or this is awesome when the guys are going out there and putting themselves in legitimate danger and doing amazing stunts, like the walking across the top rope to the Spanish fly was. Good and stuff, but the only thing that actually struck me as really weird watching it was they just kept calling him Uso. And I know that's his surname, because they kept calling him Morrison and they kept calling Kofi Kingston. I get that, but it really sounds like they don't know which one it is.
That's
like
what we thought.
I told them.
It's like it's Anuso. Anuso is doing the ring.
Oh, Uso did that. Well done. Oh, King Kofi's really going after Uso.
Just say Uso. It's safer that way.
Uso. That was the only thing that was weird. But no, I thought it was great. Absolutely kudos to the three guys for going out there and doing what they would have done.
Yeah. I think my only, and this is super hyper critical nitpicking, the only thing I didn't really like about this match is they did a spot where Morrison pushed Jimmy off the ladder and he sort of crashed to the outside, and it would have been this big sort of creative spill. But they instead, what they did is it was a pre-tape. So they didn't film Jimmy crashing onto sort of like what I would assume is a crash pad, and then, you know, just remove the crash pad and filmed him being like, oh no, I fell on the floor instead. You know, in the same way they sort of did the King Corbin Elias, you know, I killed Mufasa moments. Mm. And it really took me out of the match, because that was when I realized it was all pre-taped. Like them doing that made me go like, oh yeah, of course, this is a pre-taped match and they can edit around these sort of flubs and stuff.
Yeah, I actually didn't clock it. So I guess like because they didn't really put too much focus on it. I mean, how much of it was pre-taped, like in terms of like redo? I guess we don't know because
oh, we don't know that yet. Like,
but I would have assumed they would have just kind of like pushed, just do the whole match chronologically, because if we have to do pickups, it's going to be a nightmare. And I just assumed that the camera didn't catch. I thought he just fell to the outside and the camera just didn't catch it.
Well, if there's one thing we know about WWE is they do not have a continuity editor. So they certainly wouldn't have had continuity on set for doing this.
Imagine that being your job, to be continuity for a ladder match. Actually, that ladder match. Actually, I think that ladder was over there. Actually, no, hang on. And I think, oh, it needs to be undented. Can we undent this ladder?
It bounced somewhere over there. then we had, I really, really enjoyed this, Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins. Very, very shouty match again. Really good stuff. And it ended, they completely worked me here, ended with this super lame DQ finish. And I was already in my notes going like, ugh, lame. I'm really disappointed in that, because I felt like this needed a big finish here. Mm. And it was there by design, because Owens gets into the ring and challenges Rollins to a no DQ match. Rollins now super cocky because he's just hit him in the bell with a proper like N64 No Mercy sound effects bell. It was like the perfect bell sound. And yeah, then they had a no DQ match. So they just beat each other up pillar to post with the finish seeing Kevin Owens climbing up on top of the WrestleMania logo and doing this big KO Mac elbow drop through the announcer's table. I thought it was pretty wicked. I really, really liked all of this.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think they needed the overbooking of the match restart, like, because yeah, everyone did just immediately go to their phones being just like, okay. It's carrying on then, delete, I guess.
Save the drafts.
Yeah, exactly. This will become useful some other day. Can't believe WWE did this. I'm sure that, oh, actually it's useful in the next match. Yeah. I thought this was from an actual perspective as opposed to the sort of the strange, ironic, maybe earnest, but I'm not sure level that we all enjoy the Taker match. This is like actual WrestleMania match of the night.
Yeah, I thought 100%.
I thought Rollins was the MVP here. Necessarily for, because I thought, yeah, that dive was incredible. That's a real WrestleMania style stunt. And it weirdly looked taller than I think, because the place was completely empty. I don't know what it was about it. Like, everything had been so otherwise kind of like quiet. That stunt suddenly felt a lot bigger, even though, yeah, if it had been done from like actual kind of scaffolding, it would probably have been a lot higher. But yeah, I thought it was fantastic. But yeah, even though KO did that, I thought just Rollins keeping the story of the match going, like, he was the one who kind of kept all the kind of conversational gears turning. Like, he was the one who kind of did, and his taunting felt specific. It didn't felt like kind of made up and crap. He'd felt like he'd really prepared, gone out there with a story that he was going to tell through that match.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fantastic. Really, really, really good. Overbooked, I think, but yeah, the stuff we got was great. And it's nice to see Kevin Owens get a big win at WrestleMania.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I did think it was match of the night. It was certainly better than our semi-main event with its less than 24-hour build, because Michael Cole said so, I guess. It was Braun Strowman versus Goldberg for the Blue Universal Champion. I've only got three notes for this, which is Beardberg spamming finishes, Braun wins.
What did I put? I wrote Braun new champ after four slams. That's it. That's the whole thing.
You got less than I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was Finisher Mania. Goldberg came out. He speared Braun three times. Braun kicked out. And then he speared him for a fourth time and then went to hit him with a jackhammer, which Braun reversed which Braun reversed into a power slam. He hit three more power slams and just pinned him. That was it. That was the whole match. It went 2 minutes. It was no good. And after years of failing to capture the Universal Championship, after sort of years of not being able to win the big one for Braun Strowman, not being able to beat Brock Lesnar, this was just it. He's now the top champion on SmackDown, and it felt so flat and underwhelming. Braun's the top guy on SmackDown, and he doesn't feel like he should be at the moment. It was a bit pants.
Yeah, I think, especially after the kind of the PR disaster that he'd had in the last kind of few weeks, where he saw a lot of people turning on him, to hand him this victory, like, this is the start of this story. It's very possible that Braun Strowman might return to his wacky grappling hook, and we've been through this with Braun. We hated him once before. He was very, very crap when he was wearing the pants that made it look like he'd pissed himself in the Wyatt family, and then he became great, and then he cooled right off. And now he's bad again. But, then, you know, it's possible they can make him great. I don't know. I'm so annoyed at Goldberg that I'm willing to hand Braun this. Because, yeah, like the whole Goldberg thing with The Fiend, I thought was very, very, very bad. Inexcusably bad.
Yeah.
It made no sense. I don't think it would have shifted buy rates really at all. I think it really exposed a lot of the the kind of the card, and I think it was really, really damaging for a lot of people, not just Bray, but all the people who couldn't beat Bray. So all of that Schadenfreude kind of spilled over into this match, and I was just like, because a combination of one, I predicted it, so I liked it, and two, Goldie got his, which I liked. But yeah, I can understand people hating it. Maybe Braun will be fine. Just book him better. Book better.
I think for me, it was less of the fact that I'm down on Braun at the moment. So like, I think his sort of PR disaster really has not helped him. Has not done him any favors. I think there's also, I was a bit sour about how WWE effectively pretended that this was Roman Reigns versus Goldberg until the very last, possible minute. And then they just, Triple H did a promo, did an interview saying that we're going to announce Braun in a very unique way. That unique way was a tweet and Michael Cole saying it on commentary. Like that was, it was really flat to announce it that way. And then for Braun to just beat him in 2 minutes, it just made a Goldberg's title reign has just felt like completely pointless. And it really hurt the Fiend, and the whole thing I was just really sort of soured and down on. I don't 100% blame Braun in all of that. I blame WWE and their panic booking, because Goldberg spiked one rating, so they put the title on him.
It's exactly, I'm not saying it reminds me, it's exactly Survivor Series 99. They were advertising the Rock Triple H Austin match up until the day, even though they knew that Stone Cold needed neck surgery. He gets run over. He gets replaced literally just randomly with the Big Show. And the Big Show wins, obviously, because the replacement always wins. But God, the Big Show's title reign was really good, wasn't it?
I was about to say, and it led to a wonderful title reign that lasted, a cup of coffee, and then Triple H just beat him on telly.
My daddy. I don't know, Luke. I don't know. Is there shine from beating Goldberg in this way? Is it too much of a weird, cynically manufactured moment to actually give Braun Strowman something to brag about? Because, like, he manhandled Goldberg. Like, he completely destroyed him. And there is something in that. Like, I think it's better than Braun losing.
Yeah. Because
what's the point? Like, Goldberg, don't give anything else to Goldberg. if Braun Strowman had been, if they actually done some sort of weird invisible ropes stunt jackhammer where, like, a team of people were pulling Strowman's legs so that actually Goldberg can get him up. Like, that would have been much worse. Like, I know everyone expected Goldberg to retain to save the Reigns match, but I think this way they've salvaged something from Braun. It's just the PR stuff has come at the really worst time. Everyone thinks Braun Strowman's a dick, but I mean that stuff passes. Obviously, Seth Rollins is doing some of the best work of his career, and everyone really digs him as a heel. So this too will pass, but
it will pass.
And I hope that what remains is he squashed Goldberg essentially, which is that's cool. Like, I feel like in future, like, that could be a really good thing that they can use. Just right now, like you say, doesn't make any sense because they replaced it at the last minute. It was, it's just another weird side product of a broken Mania.
Exactly. It needs to be, I don't know. Well, we'll certainly see. But anyway, that was the show, because it ended with the Undertaker AJ match. So Braun and Taker were my only wrong predictions of the night. I had a pretty strong WrestleMania predictions.
Very good. I did terribly. I got 4 right.
Oh,
I did really badly. But I'm feeling good about night 2. I think.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll get any of those wrong.
Hopefully. Well, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, I'm really looking forward to night 2 because I thoroughly enjoyed night 1. I really, really enjoyed this WrestleMania. I kind of hope that it being across 2 nights becomes the standard, because it being 3 hours was way better than it being 7. And it felt so much, it was a breeze to watch. Aside from the Elias Corbin match and the Braun Goldberg, I didn't really hate anything on this show. And so, I had a really, really fun time watching it. It's made me excited for night 2, because night 2's got a lot more matches that I'm more excited about, like Otis, Dolph, Edge, Randy, Cena, Fiend, Drew, Lesnar. So I'm really, really stoked for night two.
Otis, Dolph, huh? Right.
Yes, I
right,
like
that one right out the goal. Okay. I
open
think
up it's... your heart, Adam. Open up your heart to him.
Never. Never. Not to the dancing men. I think it's a stretch to say that I liked it. I think there are moments of it. I think like most kind of like decent-ish quality manias, you're going to go back and rewatch matches. You're not going to rewatch the whole show. I do think there were some needlessly bad things in it. Like that stretch, like the hour of Corbin, Becky, and then
the Brian Zayn
and Brian going short. Like I can understand people being just like, that was rough. Like that's bad. That's just, it's not even the circumstances. That's just bad booking. That's just bad. It's really underwhelming for what's been promised. So like, but the Boneyard match was so great. The ladder match was great. Owens Rollins was really good. The Kabuki Warriors was fine. Like they gave it time, which, you know, more respect than I ever thought they'd give Asuka and Kairi in defeat. Yeah, there was some really good kind of like stuff in Zayn Bryan. I don't hate Braun being the champ. I kind of hope it ends up being something that's for the best. I don't know. I can't quite shrug some disappointment, but maybe that's just the low level stress of all of this. The fact that it was always a wrong WrestleMania. Like maybe I'm finding it difficult to kind of look on the bright side. I don't know. But I absolutely applaud especially the wrestlers and you know the production team for going out there and putting on a show that I don't think it's nice to have everyone be like, oh cool, about WrestleMania 36. I would much rather that than the other. And like people walking away from the show being just like rad, looking forward to night two. That's as kind of as good I think as this Mania could be. So great for that.
The only thing that we didn't touch on was Mojo is the 24/7 champion. Gronk did an attack on Truth, and then Mojo stole his pin. So yeah, Mojo is the champ, and I'm sure it will lead to some Gronk shenanigans. I can't work that.
Shenanigronks.
There you go. In for night two. So cool.
I don't have anything to say. Carry on. Right.
Let's get into the rest of your super chats. John Williams says, Taker versus AJ was Roadhouse. It meets No Country for Old Men. It was great.
Wow, that's high praise.
Particularly Roadhouse. Great film. Tim Arndt says, next time I'm on a private browser, I'm going to play Metallica and see if it actually works.
I'm sorry.
Joe Libro says, what if Finn comes back and faces Undertaker and gets revenge for AJ Styles? That way we can get Demon versus Dead Man. Demon Balor in a Boneyard scenario. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Gachateen says, Adam, when will my dad come back with the milk?
He's not coming back. He's gone now. I'm so sorry.
El Torigo, Adam, you've mentioned that the Shield breaking up in 2014 was the right call. Meanwhile, Luke, you argue that it was too soon. If you could indulge me and debate it, that would be lovely. That feels like a whole episode unto itself. Mm. But I do think it was too soon.
I thought they'd beaten everyone there was to beat.
They just turned babyface. They were about to go for a year babyface run.
So you strike while that momentum's hot, while everyone is jumping at the bit. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, while they... Biggest wins of their careers, back to back, absolute domination. Then suddenly they break up. It's just like, oh my god! Like it's the most dramatic it could have been, rather than it sort of petering out.
Peter out. What a nice fella.
I hate you, Luke.
Anton H said, "Oh, Sting versus the Undertaker. in a Boneyard match.
It can finally happen. It can finally happen. Yes.
They found the magic formula. Now we can have all of these Undertaker dream matches. Matt Field, a 4-star show for me. Worst parts was Corbin and Braun. Match of the night with a tag title match. Shame about Shayna. Loved the main event, but AJ should have gone over.
I mean, yeah, maybe. Like, it's too much fun, I think. As soon as it was main event, you're just like, well, Taker's winning. Well, of course he is. You know, I kind of rescind. Like, I felt like WWE did that much better than sad old Taker having a match and tapping out. That probably wouldn't have felt very Mania-like.
Would have KML. Helped AJ, but... KML says, please don't bury me. Was AJ asking Taker or Vince McMahon?
I think that was the point.
Daryl Spikerman, yeah, enjoyed night one of Mania. Thank you for the awesome content. Stay safe, guys. You stay safe.
Stay safe to you too.
David Lin says, cheers from Singapore. Y'all have made the last few weeks of stay home much more manageable. Hope to be able to catch up on some of Indie Mania later on. That's absolutely right, because we're going to be showing night two of Indie Mania about an hour's time from this. In fact, it is in literally an hour's time. We're going to have night two of that. We're going to be up in the chats to have fun with you all watching some great wrestling. There was, in night one, the Zack Sabre Jr. versus Shibata match from Rev Pro in 2016 was unbelievable. Oh, and the tag match of David Starr and Jordan Devlin versus Low-Key and Walter.
Oh, OTT, my God.
It was incredible. Absolutely. I recommend everyone go out and check out Indomania. It was so much fun. Pavi let Andy out of his cage. It says, if Braun won yesterday, can Tamina win today?
No.
Probably not.
No, no. Don't do that.
God Urquhart says, wow, Adam back. Met him at a WCPW show. Good to see you.
Oh, good to see you too.
To One Night Manias.
Say again, sorry, you cut out briefly.
Sorry, Josh Dynamic says, never go back to One Night Manias.
Yeah, God, so much easier to watch. And like, oh, I was still awake for the main event of a WrestleMania. That's unusual for a man in his 30s. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I had a horrific realization today when I was listening to an episode of Talking Simpsons. And it's the episode Life in the Fast Lane from season one, where Homer buys Marge the bowling ball. And he bought that bowling ball for her 34th birthday. Yeah.
Wow.
So I am now the same age that Marge was in season one of The Simpsons, when they were like the old parents and you're meant to like the cool kid Bart.
Yeah, their marriage was on the rocks at that point. Oh no.
Brad J. Rassman, I just have to say, Nose Roll Bard is hands down the best and greatest content I've ever seen. I've gotten the game for me and my mates to play. Kid Blips versus Tony the Milkman was the best feud.
Oh, that's really good. It's nice to see Nathan D. Powerletta getting some money out of the show. That's fantastic. Really glad you liked it and enjoy playing it with your mates.
Jack Wilkes says, since we now have to fill for the next year's for Roman's coronation, could we get a decent Braun Fiend feud? Could be some decent story in that.
Yeah, like that's the thing, is I think Braun's got massive potential. Like we've seen him be great. We've seen him, like, people were talking about him being the next Hulk Hogan. You know, like I think most booking you can repair from. Mm-hmm. You know, like, let's see how buzzed we are about the Fiend after the Firefly Funhouse match. It's possible that could erase the horribleness of Saudi Arabia. It's possible.
Yeah,
and Hell in a Cell.
Miguel 8A says, the main event was awful. I couldn't get into it whatsoever. Really left a bad taste. So I think it's been most, as I said, I think the pendulum has swung more into the positive side, but there are those who really didn't get on with it. Pavi led Andrew's cage. I hope the Gronk doesn't cause the Fiend to lose. God, of all people.
Oh, that would be, oh no.
That's real dark timeline
stuff. Oh no. Well, now that energy's out in the world.
And finally, Gachatine said, who is going to be live streaming night two? I want it to be Adam. Well, unfortunately, it won't be. It's going to be me, Laurie, and Pete doing the live streams tonight. Adam's place is too small. And
it is. My place is just one room, and my partner really wouldn't like it if I spent the entire night shouting into a microphone about the Firefly Funhouse. She has such little patience for such things, and rightfully so.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.